Thursday is the day of the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival, and I am thrilled to have Carl Doubleday in the studio, the man who has ushered in many of these festivals, as well as current director of vocal studies at Western Michigan University. I'm sure I don't have the title quite right, Kim, but Dr. Kimberly Dunn Adams joining me again here on WMUK. Great to have you here to preview this festival.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being here, both of you. First of all, let's give listeners those good informational facts. What is available to the public in this festival, and what can we come and see?
Well, the big event is the concert on Thursday night at 7 p.m. in Miller Auditorium.
And that's at... That combines how many performers on stage?
About 1,000.
That's shocking.
The festival choir is made up of singers from somewhere between 10 and 12 different high schools from the Southwestern Michigan region. And in fact, the choir actually sits at the orchestra level of Miller Auditorium and fills that entire section. The audience sits in the balcony above, and the conductor conducts from the stage. So this is one of the largest festivals that one could attend in terms of magnitude and amount of singing voices.
You know, last week I talked to Rick Phelps about a concert by the Kalamazoo Singers that happened on Sunday, and he talked about his experience adjudicating high school festivals. Mm. In fact, that experience was the reason he put the concert together. It was filled with festival favorites. But he says that the level of singing right now in Michigan is at a wonderful high point. Mm-hmm. Just great training, great singers, and dedicated people. So I'm excited that he dropped that hint, and I'm wondering if you could expound a little more on why singing in Michigan right now is doing so well.
I really think a lot of it has to do with the dedication of the teachers. There are a lot of unbelievable K through 12 music teachers that devote so much of their lives to teaching and inspiring young people. Choir is a place where people feel like home. They feel like they can be themselves. And we've got teachers that are combining this scientifically proven fact that choir makes people healthier and happier with the fact that they have superb training and teach that and pass it on to their students. We also have several really strong choral organizations in the state. We have MSVMA, which is the Michigan Schools Vocal Music Association, a very, very strong organization that hosts festivals throughout the year. And then we also have a Michigan chapter of the American Choral Directors Association, which also serves our choral singers in this state. So Michigan is a particularly wonderful place to be for choral music.
Are you aware of high school choral teachers who were trained here at Western Michigan University?
So many of them. And I feel such pride when I go through the state and adjudicate high school choirs. And when I head to places like the Michigan Music Conference, because so many of the featured choirs performing at conferences and winning top scores at adjudicated festivals are conducted by our graduates.
The social implications of choir versus, you know, winning awards, I wonder if maybe the sort of life-saving aspect of being with a group of people in unity is really a stronger point to joining a choir and participating.
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually one of the things I love about the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival. We have 1,000 people in the choir. And one of the things I think every year when this festival comes up, I'm reminded of a statement from Robert Shaw's Creed of the Collegiate Chorale that says that choral music is of a unique and distinct service to humankind because it offers the most immediate and accessible avenue of participation. That is that the body is the voice. And what I think is so incredible about this festival is that I just don't think there are many other places in society where you can have 1,000 young people in one room doing the same thing at the same time. That's a rare and precious gift, and it's one of the things that really won my heart when I first came to Michigan, was seeing that happen at this festival.
I have a more nefarious idea of like, wow, 1,000 people in one place. That's 1,000 votes. That's 1,000 donations. That's, you know, that's a way to advertise. But this is about singing.
Yes, it is.
And learning music together. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a pretty good cause to me. Again, the concert is at 7 p.m. You will be ushered up to the grand tier if you're in the audience, and then be able to experience the overwhelming sound of 1,000 voices, plus instrumentalists as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's Thursday at 7 o'clock. And I'd like to invite Carl Doubleday to maybe offer some thoughts on the history of this festival. I don't know much about when it started or anything like that. So, Carl?
It's a fascinating history. And believe it or not, it started in 1935. So this year is the 81st Southwest Michigan Vocal Festival. 81 years. There were a couple interruptions, World War II, for example. But that's the length of the festival. And I have many representative facts that I know about the first 50 years of the festival. The 50th festival was celebrated in 1988. Mm-hmm. And we prepared a booklet on the history of the festival. So
Which you brought along, I see.
Yeah, and with a few bookmarks. But this, it's just unbelievable. 1,000 voices is unbelievable.
Was Miller Auditorium around at that time?
No, it started on Oakland Drive, the men's gymnasium.
Yeah.
It was in that facility from 35 to 1957. Then Reed Field House, some of the listeners will remember Reed Field House is in its original configuration. It's now, of course, part of it is University Arena. But it was in Reed Field House from 58 to 63. And actually 67. And then in 68, it was in Miller. And Miller opened in 68. So this festival was held in there as soon as possible. But the numbers, historically, and I'm sure Kim knows this, but in the 50s and 60s in particular, high school choirs were huge. Just very large. And I sang in this festival in 1959.
You had to be in high school for that.
I was in high school. I noticed in this book, my high school had 275 people in it. Over 100 of them were in the men's glee club and the women's glee club. And when we come to the vocal festival day, they really just didn't have classes at that high school. One out of three people, more than one out of three people left. But this festival in those years got so large that even though it was in Reed Fieldhouse, they did it 2 days in a row so that it was manageable.
In order for everyone to participate.
Yes. At that time, well, let's start with 57, 2,000, 59, 2,100. 61, 2,500.
Oh, Carl.
62, 2,600. And they did the same thing 2 days in a row with all different schools. The number of schools in that same time was in the upper 30s.
So I started the interview by praising our current choral situation to high heavens, but now I want to go back to the 1960s and see.
Well, many listeners will remember the name Harper C. Maybe.
The first
actual music building at Western was named for him. And he was big on choral singing, just as Kim described it, an activity that most anyone can do, and they were doing it. It was like almost everybody used to take piano lessons, too. But that's another story. But in 1935, Harper C. Mabee decided to create a special event recognizing it was Bach oriented. It was his 250th. I forget. I'm not finding that right now. Celebration of his birth, I think. 85 to 35. Yeah, it was 250. Yeah. 250th year. So he put together the university choruses, and he brought in local high school choruses, and used an orchestra. And I guess it was an all Bach program. At the time I was working on this, I probably had a copy of that program. But that's how this started. I'm not going to get that much in detail, but that's how it started. And pretty soon, university choruses dropped out of the picture.
And it became more youth-oriented.
In 1958, the festival became exclusively a high school festival. And the participating schools participated on one of two festival days, each day involving 900 to 1,300 singers.
And so we can thank Harper C. Mabee for getting it started.
This is just for you, Kara, but look what it looked like in the field house.
Well, I'm looking at a very full set of bleachers.
They filled one corner of it, and they were all in white tops.
Yeah.
And dark. And all the guys wore ties. And this would be one day and then the next. So it's quite a wonderful history.
I think
and
singing
over
often,
the years it has become a who's who of choral directors in the United States of America.
Yeah.
It really has been. The list of names is just incredible. And I don't mean to keep talking, but I want to give Kim something that she will be interested in. Because I looked that up. Originally, Harper C. Mabee conducted it himself, 3 years. And then it went to a very famous name, Olaf Christiansen, Noble Kane, Harry Robert Wilson, Maynard Klein, Margaret Hillis. I want to make sure I remembered Margaret Hillis.
Goodness.
Just on and on. You name it.
For listeners, maybe tell us who Margaret Hillis was.
Margaret Hillis is one of the most famous female conductors in the country, and conducted the Chicago Symphony Chorus, and is just holy ground would be the word to describe the ground she walked on.
Wow.
But Harper C. Mabee conducted the first three, then they started bringing in names. And then in 1955, Elwin Carter conducted it. He was maybe a successor, and he was chair of the department and did all the choral stuff, founded the Varsity Vagabonds, which became Gold Company. But Kim, I think you're the third resident choral director to direct this festival, and I think it's wonderful that you're doing that. And I'm sure the students are just going to love her like we all do.
Well, it's such a huge, huge honor to get to do this.
You recently visited Massachusetts and performed a similar function there as a guest director of a high school festival.
Yeah.
Would you tell us a little about that experience?
Well, I just returned from a trip to Boston to do the Massachusetts All-State Choir. That performance was in Boston Symphony Hall, which is just an amazing place to be.
How many students were involved, roughly?
Oh, that was about 300 in that chorus.
Okay. Any repertoire that you're excited about sharing with listeners today? What can we help preview this concert with?
Well, one thing I'd like to preface this with is that I think everything on the program really approaches music from the idea that it is to express our better selves. And so many of the pieces on the program have really have a positive atmosphere. So one of the pieces that I'm so excited to do with a 1,000-person chorus is the final movement from Vaughan Williams' 5 Mystical Songs, Antiphon. Let all the world in every corner sing are the words that are repeated over and over and over again in that piece.
Let's take a break, listen to music of Rayfawn Williams, and we'll be back with Kimberly Dunn Adams and Carl Doubleday. We're previewing the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival. The public concert is 7 p.m. on Thursday, and you're invited to come to Miller Auditorium. Is there an admission charged for this concert?
I believe the concert is free.
It's free for everyone, so be prepared to head up to the grand tier. That will be your opportunity to sit and hear 1,000 voices at Miller Auditorium. Kimberly Dunn Adams, that was vigorous and joyful. You know, that tune had maybe just like 5 pitches in it, but it's such a so beautifully set. And was it Latin or English?
English, though I believe that choir was British. So
I wasn't. We were talking a little bit during the music, but fantastic choral piece by Vaughan Williams from his 5 Mystical Songs. And the event is Thursday at 7 p.m. The Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival final concert will be held in Miller Auditorium. But there's a lot of activity happening already toward this final day of the festival. Mm-hmm. Thursday is an all-day activity for participants.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What are some of the activities?
Well, so the choir will rehearse together for the first time on the day of the festival. There are approximately 5 hours of rehearsal that day. And then they break for dinner and come back and give a concert. And it's not that often, really, that you have a choir come together starting at about 10 o'clock in the morning, and your day concludes with a concert on the same day. So that's pretty unique. Inside that day, the festival choir, which is 1,000 singers, will rehearse for about 4.5 hours. And then the honors choir, which is a smaller subset from the festival chorus of about 60 singers that auditioned to get accepted to that choir, they'll rehearse for another hour by themselves. And the performance will feature both choirs.
I see. How is the honors choir chosen? You said they were auditioned, but I also heard from Carl during the music that they're nominated sometimes by their own choral directors.
Yes. Their choral directors make the selections about who gets to audition for the honors choir. So they have to be nominated by their directors, and then they have to pass an audition that's on campus.
Now, Carl was director of operations. What was your title at Western?
Director of concerts.
Director
but
of concerts.
We did handle major festivals and the high school summer music camp. And
you know about what it takes to bring thousands of people to campus and have everything adhere to a schedule, make sure people are in the right places at the right time. And these are young people, so a lot of stuff brand new to them. Can you give us a behind-the-scenes look at putting on a festival such as this?
Well, doing it over and over again, it helps a lot. You learn by, oh, gosh, we got to. And there's a festival committee still, right? It was originally, we consider this festival is hosted by the Western Michigan University School of Music. And so its governing body is, it used to be at least like 3 members from the faculty and 3 high school directors, each of them elected for maybe a 3-year term. It rotates, like the U.S. Senate, you know. But they make major decisions in that group, and that caused many significant changes over the years, too numerous to mention. But it got fine-tuned through listening to the members of that committee. And then I, as producer, I guess you would say, would figure out how to make that work. Let's talk about chorus discipline a moment.
Okay.
It didn't take long for us to figure out that if the students, the singers, were not sitting by their best friends, the chorus was a little easier to keep the tension. So we developed a system of assigned seats and used the seating tickets at Miller.
Yeah.
They would print them out for us. We'd shuffle them, put them in vocal parts, sections, and then fill the school's ticket orders randomly. So they're just scattered. I'm pretty sure that's the way it's still done. That's a good example of the committee thought, well, maybe if they weren't sitting by each other. It's not that they're bad.
It's just a temptation.
They're just excited. So, to some of them, this is one of the biggest days in their school year. At least it used to be. It was for me.
Oh, that's a great little tidbit from behind the scenes, randomizing the participants so that their focus will be more on the director and learning the music. I'm interested in that you said 4.5 hours of rehearsal. Mm-hmm. For how much music? How many selections?
Well, the festival choir will put together 4 pieces, and the honors choir puts together another 3. So 7 total from the festival choirs.
Mm-hmm. How do you handle yourself? I mean, you will be directing this choir, mm-hmm. both the 1,000 voices as well as the honors choir of 60. I'm more curious about how you manage 1,000 voices.
Well, it'll be my first time doing so.
Okay.
But I have had the benefit of watching other conductors do this for the last 7 years. And it's just been an honor to watch all of our guest conductors come in and do this each year. But for almost all of them, it's their first time conducting a choir this large. And my big strategy is to go for the music. And that's the amazing thing about what we do. Music speaks for itself. And if you enable it to speak loudly enough, I imagine the room should be no problem.
When the chorus is filling the main floor of Miller Auditorium, you're having them stand, of course, to sing better, right?
During the performance, yes.
They're separated by vocal type?
Vocal part, yes. Yeah. So your sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses will all be, they'll all be in the orchestra, but they'll be seated in sections. And the honors choir will be seated in the very first 2 rows.
I see. Oh, just the logistics are amazing to me. The vocal festival again, Thursday at 7 p.m. And Carl?
I just found something I've been looking for in this history. I'm going to read verbatim what I wrote. And I sometimes get chills when I do this. But I did lots of research, and one of them was reading the Gazette. About that time of year, I look for something, and it was well covered. Here's an example. This was a Saturday issue in 1939. And the Gazette included a review of the festival performance of the 4th festival on the front page of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Also on the front page was an article including a quote from Germany's propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, stating, "Germany's army was so strong, even its own people don't know its power."
1939.
But it got a smaller headline than the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival. Oh. Things like that just made me keep going, trying to find as much information as I could at the time.
The festival was of great interest to
its
readers.
I'm sorry, but I forgot I had another.
Oh, please.
A review of the 1940 festival in the Gazette on Saturday, May 25, began with these words, "Battalions of youth on wings of bombers, equipped with hatred and dealing death, or battalions of youth on wings of song, equipped with goodwill and promoting amity. Strong stuff.
Well, I'm really glad to see there's a through line of purpose in bringing singers together from the 30s through today. I think it is all one message. Singing together helps more than it hurts, certainly. Perhaps we could look at another piece of music featured on Thursday.
Well, so this one would be performed by the Honors Choir, and it's an ode to nature called Ballad to the Moon by Daniel Elder as one of his three nocturnes.
Did I hear his name in a recent concert as well?
Oh, probably. Actually, yes.
Yes, Chorale.
Chorale did another one of the three nocturnes not too long ago.
Yeah.
And this... this particular piece is sort of a rapturous ode to the beauty of nature. It's absolutely beautiful.
Well, let's hear it, and we'll be back with Kimberly Dunn Adams and Carl Doubleday. The Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival begins at 7 p.m. on Thursday in Miller Auditorium. That is music of Daniel Elder, and it's a piece that will be featured on Thursday at the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival, which brings together high school-aged singing students. Some of them are picked to be in an honors choir. Others enjoy the full day of preparation and experience singing in a 1,000-voice choir. At the end of the day, 7 p.m. on Thursday, which is looking like one of the nicest days we'll have this week weather-wise. My guests are Dr. Kimberly Dunn Adams and Carl Doubleday, who former director of concerts at the School of Music at Western Michigan University, and now still sends me concert notices from the Millwood concert series. This is something Carl has been giving a lot of thought to and pulling out reminders, various programs from years past. We talked about how Harper C. Maybe created the festival in the mid-30s, and it's now in its 81st year of nearly continuous yearly festivals. How big is the Southwestern Michigan region? Where are all the students coming from, roughly?
Oh, geographically, if you can imagine a line from like Muskegon across the top of Grand Rapids and wrap around down to Jackson. But I think it's become a little tighter than that over the years. Mm-hmm. It's a slightly smaller area. And it's not easy for a high school choral director to work this festival into their schedule. It was the big thing for decades, but now there's so many other things. High school choral festivals and high school musicals have become unbelievably huge production, and this falls often during many of those musicals. And so the number of participation of the schools by number have decrease somewhat by circumstance, I think, more than by choice. And budgets. You have to purchase this music.
or rent the music,
no,
rights?
No, I got or you, maybe you might could borrow it if it's older. But it's a budget issue.
Have you ever lost a student or a teacher or a bus or anything?
I don't think I should comment on a lost student.
Okay.
I can only think, actually, of one time all the years I did this.
Wow.
From 71 to 2010.
Goodness gracious.
Yep.
Well, we won't worry about that. Everything's going to go swimmingly on Thursday. And there will be, feet on campus already. You mentioned preparatory rehearsals. And would you remind me when those are again? How many?
Well, the Honors Choir rehearses for 2 Mondays and then the day before the festival on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And then, but some of the rest of the participants will be seeing campus maybe for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exciting, I think, going to a college when you're in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new world, something to look around and see the slightly older students as music majors doing their thing, too. Are there any college students helping with this, performing in an ensemble? Or?
Well, yes. As part of the concert, we usually invite one or two college ensembles to do a very, very brief program for the high school students. So it's normally University Chorale, but since I'm conducting the festival this year, we thought maybe we'd give them the year off and me that right. 15 minutes off. And so Gold Company will be doing 2 pieces and Cantus Femina, our women's chorus, will be doing 2 pieces.
Very good. Again, the concert is open to the public at 7, and you'll be seated up in the grand tier in order to hear the Thousand Voice Choir on Thursday. We didn't really talk about the music we just heard.
Mm.
It was really gorgeous. I'm glad you brought it with you today. Daniel Elder seems to be a very talented
mm-hmm.
composer. Does of choral music mostly?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The colors he uses are just absolutely beautiful, and I think the way he writes for piano is lovely. And our collaborative pianist, Tina Gorder, plays his music in a way that's just so colorful and alive.
What are some other pieces to look forward to?
Well, we'll be doing Bruckner's Locus Iste, which is about a wonderful space. The Honors Choir is doing Gerald Finzi's My Spirit Sang All Day. And then the Festival Choir, in addition to a few other pieces, the Festival Choir is closing the festival with Lee Wilder and Greg Jaspers's Stand Up and Make a Change, which is about making the world a better place, something I feel strongly about.
Carl, do you have any other historical goodies for us to chew on?
No, but I think the listeners might. I heard who is accompanying the festival chorus this year. Did I? Who is doing that?
Tina Gorder.
Okay, she is. All right. My mistake. We'll talk about that in a minute. I think not.
So it's still stunning to me that you participated in this festival.
Yeah.
Did you say 1959?
1959, and then I was put in charge of it in 1971, because it was not healthy, and it wasn't the high school people's fault. So the director of the School of Music at the time thought maybe it was time for the festival to maybe it had run its course, and pretty soon he had an office full of high school choral directors
saying no.
And so he had no choice but to continue the festival, so he called me in and told me to fix it. Those were his very words.
What were some of the ideas you had to make it healthy again?
Well, organize it well, period. That was it. Mm-hmm. And I think the governance, the shared governance came up soon after that. But
as you described, a board with some faculty and with some choral directors all giving input.
Yeah.
Well, we could look at another piece of music here.
I think some Bruckner might be in order.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Bruckner. So the symphony played Mahler on Saturday. And why is it people always put them in the same or maybe not people, maybe just me, put them in the same category, late romantic. What is something about Bruckner that really distinguishes him to you?
One of the things that's actually kind of a quirky love that I have for Bruckner is that he was incredibly familiar with the organ as an instrument. Mm-hmm. And so in his choral music, he writes in a way that's almost like an organ registration. And so the dynamic levels are terraced in that way. Even Debussy and voicing in what he does with singers is really reminiscent of what might be played on an organ.
Carl, have you played Bruckner organ pieces?
I accompanied a solo, a mezzo solo once by Bruckner, but I'm going to say no.
Okay. Well, here's some fresh Bruckner to listen to. It'll be featured on Thursday at the Southwestern Michigan Vocal Festival. Music of Bruckner sung a cappella, no instruments accompanying there. My guest is Dr. Kim Adams, who will be directing the Southwest Michigan Vocal Festival final concert on Thursday at 7 p.m. How do you keep the kids from drifting off of their pitches?
Oh, their directors prepare them so well. I know that the day of the festival, it's all going to be about just making music together.
So they know their parts really
well.
Yes,
they absolutely will.
Will this be the massed choir in that selection, or will it be the 60-voice honors choir?
That'll be the massed choir, and it will be spectacular.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming along. Are there any other thoughts or reminders you have for listeners about Thursday's festival?
7 p.m., free concert, Miller Auditorium, and enjoy.
All right. And Carl, any last thoughts on our talk today?
I just give thanks that this tradition continues, and it takes a lot of effort and a dedicated commitment from the School of Music to keep it going, and thankfully they still do it. Well, I hope it climbs to 100.
81, yeah, it certainly could. And to be fair to the School of Music, this is not the only festival that the school holds. I mean, there's still a conference on wind and percussion this spring.
They're usually about 2 weeks apart, or else we would die.
It's quite a lot of activity, but it's all in the name of music and community.
And education.
And education, yes, sir. Let's hear about is this a Billy Joel song?
It sure is. Mm-hmm. It's a Billy Joel song arranged for the King Singers, and it'll be sung by the Honors Choir. It's a heartbreaker of a piece.
Well, we'll leave you with that then. And again, listeners are invited to join the Southwest Michigan Vocal Festival final concert on Thursday at 7 p.m. Thank you, Carl, and thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong.